Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
It is lunchtime. I think I'm hungry already.
Well, it's been a long offseason. We finally get a little taste of some football tomorrow.
There you go. We are ready to get going. Welcome to the kickoff of a brand new show, for one, and a brand new season as well, with Notre Dame and Temple kicking off tomorrow at 3:30. We're going to get you started right now. And we are here for the long haul. It won't just be the football season. 52 weeks a year, baby. Huh? Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
All right. I'm Sean Stiers, and he is Evan Sharpley. Not just a former Notre Dame quarterback, but I mean, we have to say a former Notre Dame baseball player,
right,
as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Evan was a two-sport player and played in the minor leagues for a while.
I played with the Seattle Mariners for a little bit.
Right.
And then kind of transitioned into the fitness world before doing a couple of things in media. Started with the South Bend Tribune, Eric Hansen over there, and started doing a few things here on WSBT Sports Beat, weekly sports beat, and now with 24/7 sports, working for the Irish side of that, and own a gym with my wife. We got a lot going on here, and now
just a couple things.
We're fitting this thing in now on Fridays.
Slam some radio in the middle of it.
Absolutely,
why not? And we are presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit sharpleytraining.com. So that'll be it. You are basically our presenting sponsor, and great to have you aboard aspects.
For anybody watching high school football games tonight, most of the area quarterbacks train at our facility. What we say, though, is any of those quarterbacks that are throwing interceptions definitely aren't training with us.
That's everyone who's perfect is.
There we go. Yeah. Why not?
Absolutely. All right. Well, Evan, the season does kick off tomorrow. The Fighting Irish have undergone just a lot of different changes and a lot of different aspects. We've got all new coordinators, got a new strength and conditioning coordinator, football performance, I guess they call it. We've got all these different changes. So what to you stands out the most about all these changes that we've seen from this team?
Well, I know nobody wants to go back to the 2016 season, but you know, those changes, that was why. You know, anytime you lose that many games, there's got to be some sweeping changes, and that's what, you know, Brian Kelly did in the offseason. I think for me, the biggest initial change, especially right when the season ended, was the brand new strength and conditioning staff. You had a guy that was with Brian Kelly for years and years and years, and now you're bringing in new energy, new people, and I think the players really, really liked that. I think they liked the energy that was brought in the weight room. I think they liked some of the changes. And in my world, too, in the fitness world, I love a lot of the things that they're doing. I think they're doing some awesome things where they're able to measure and track feedback much easier. You're seeing the force production. They've got these really cool pieces of equipment where on each lift you can see the speed, you can see the force. The players love that. And also then they're able to see a snapshot of, am I getting stronger? There's tangible ways. And am I getting faster? Tracking that data in a unique way using technology has been fantastic. And another thing, too, that I'm seeing is you're seeing a push away from like your traditional lifting of, we're just going to bench, we're just going to squat, we're just going to deadlift. We're going to still do those things. We're going to build some pure strength, but then we're going to say, well, what can you do with that pure strength? Can you go and push things and pull things and flip things and jump on things? And obviously, then it's got to translate to what you're doing on the field and on Saturdays. Can you push people? Can you tackle people? And certainly some fundamentals get into that as well. But the way these guys feel right now, I know, and the way they look, or the way they think they look, has changed quite a bit. And when you're confident like that as an athlete, it does wonders. You know, there was a saying when I was playing baseball, you look good, you feel good, you play good. And I think that that's how a lot of these guys feel right now.
Well, and I think anyone who's played a sport knows that there's a big difference between, like, say, the summertime when you're out there on your own doing some of that stuff. It's one thing to kind of go through the motions and it's another thing to have someone stand there and actually push you. And to the team's credit, that's one of the things that came up when Brian Kelly was doing all those exit interviews at the end of last season, where guys were saying, we want to be pushed, we need to be pushed harder, we need to work harder. And, I mean, you can really see it, whether it's Mike McGlinchey adding, what, like 10 reps to his 225 right. bench.
And, and cutting some weight while he did it, too. I mean, he's moving better. And I think anytime, you know, as a player, you're going elsewhere for training, which there were some players doing that, that's certainly a red flag. You've got Division I athletes. If you tell them to jump a certain height, they're going to try to jump that high.
Right.
If you tell them to run a certain length, they're going to try to run that far, run that fast. So when you set that bar, and I don't think the bar maybe was high enough, and you bring in new guys, you know, a fresh perspective, I think that you're going to see a team, especially to start the season, that's going to be in much better shape. If you look at a year ago, in 2016, there were a lot of games lost in the fourth quarter. Whether
exactly.
that was physical conditioning, that certainly could have been part of it. But you have the mental side, too, that's being broken down. And I know that that's being addressed right now, too.
Exactly. 7 of the 8 losses were by 8 points or less.
Yeah.
And there's only one that was 8 points. The rest were all, it varied. There were a couple by 1 point. You had the overtime loss to start off the season. All these games that are close. And now, granted, again, there were a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. The defensive side, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit as well. But you've got to think that conditioning and the whole that whole aspect really plays into that when you're that close in the fourth quarter. And we've heard guys say during this training camp that they feel as fresh on practice rep, live rep number 60 or 65 as they did on reps number 1 and 2.
That's what happens when your off season is difficult.
That's right.
When you get pushed in December, you know, and you get pushed in January, February, March, and April, and then into the summer, when those months are the hardest, come fall camp, that's easy. you're like, yeah, this is it? You're in that good of physical shape, physical conditioning, and then also the mental side. You know that what you're doing right now it pales in comparison to what you had previously done. It was way harder in
right.
January and February. And if your mentality is that, I survived that. I got through that. I got through the summer where, you know, whatever it may be, they're doing obstacle courses. They're doing, you know, neat competitions, you know, where it wasn't just how much am I moving? It's can I move faster than the guy next to me? I'm competing with myself,
right.
but I'm also competing with other guys on my team. That type of mentality and building that culture is really important. If you look at a lot of the top programs in the nation, I guarantee you, if you went and asked the head coach, he's going to point at the strength and conditioning coach in the offseason and say, he's one of the big reasons, if not the reason, why we are so talented when it comes to the end of the year, why we win games in the fourth quarter. Our players are in shape, and they're going to be mentally strong to win.
Now, one of the other changes has been, again, all the coaching changes have played in there, but Brian Kelly has also spent the better part of the last 8 months driving home some important traits
sure.
with his team, his traits of excellence that he calls them. And let's hear him explaining some of that right now.
Well, it's really simple in that you're either above the line on those traits or you're below the line. If you're getting the ball thrown over your head, there's no attention to detail. Right? If you're jumping offside, you know, what's your focus? If we're in a non-contact drill and you're trying to drive somebody to the ground and you can get somebody hurt, are you really being smart? Right? If I'm asking you to be gritty and you can't continue to fight through hot conditions and with the proper rest, you can't fight through the entire practice, do you have the grit necessary? So all of those things come to the forefront as to are you above that line or are you below that line on a day-to-day basis. So they all translate into the evaluation of what we need from our football team on a day-to-day basis.
Grit. We heard a lot about grit, especially in the spring.
Have you read that book?
Grit?
Yeah, I still got to pick that book up.
There's a book called Grit?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't realize that.
That's where this whole thought process
oh, yeah,
is coming from. Yeah. I'll have to, you know, maybe you, are we above the line? You and I, are you above the line?
I don't know. That's a good question. Man, might fall below the line. Well, but it's, again, kind of going back to what we're talking about. You sort of gain grit by going through a lot of these things that we were just talking about with the physical conditioning and the whole thing.
And it's a change of culture, I think, is what's trying to be accomplished here by Coach Kelly and his staff. And maybe there was a dropping of the ball per se over the last couple of years where whether there wasn't that type of structure, those traits of excellence, maybe they were assumed. In a lot of programs, if you're not telling the player specifically, this is what we expect of you, how do they know? You know, you might want to say that we stand for this, this, and this. But if that's not being developed or if that's not at the forefront, and certainly, you know, being in the Goog, being at a lot of these press events, we're seeing now it's displayed everywhere.
Yeah.
We're seeing all these different traits of what the program wants to stand for, what their goals are, and what they want to accomplish. And I'm a big believer in that, too. If you want to accomplish something, write it down. Put it in front of your face.
That's right.
If you see it every day, right, and you really are you know, trying to go after that goal, it's something's going to be ingrained in you pretty deep down where the workout might be tough. But that's what's up on the board or on the wall right there, that's what I'm going after, so it's okay. I'm gonna dig in and I'm gonna work a little bit harder.
Right. It is 12:11 on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Sean and Sharpley with the Leprechaun Lunch, our debut edition. Now, one of the other big things, obviously, we're gonna see a new offense out there as well. The new offensive coordinator, Chip Long, and along with that, we're also going to see a new quarterback. Brandon Wimbush will make his first start tomorrow. A lot to like about him, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Here's what Kelly had to say about Wimbush this week.
I think really where it starts for most quarterbacks that I have coached is their ability to move through a poor play and get to the next play. Let it go and move on to the next one and not let it affect the next one. He has the great ability to show, and I know you hear this quite a bit now, and it's chronicled everywhere, but he's got a passion for the game and he's got perseverance. You know, I think Angela Duckworth called that in her book Grit, right? He's got grit. You know, he's got such a passion for what he does, and because he loves what he does, he doesn't get down. If he makes a mistake, he fights through it, and he gets to the next play. That's a great quality to have in anything that we do in life. I mean, I'd like to be better at it too, but he does it at the quarterback position, which is a really fine trait to have for a young player.
Angela Duckworth, he answered the question for us right there, the book Grit. I'm going to have to check that out. But how important do you think that is for a quarterback?
It's something that I talk to my guys all the time about. And, you know, we have lengthy conversations on the mental side of the game with the quarterbacks that I train. And, you know, some people call that unflappable. I was always told have a thick skin and short memory. You're only as good as your last play. You know, you go and complete a pass, you throw a beautiful 14-yard comeback. Okay, get in the huddle, take a deep breath. Now go do it again. You know,
right.
It's the same way on the baseball field for a lot of guys too. It's rinse and repeat, but you have to wash certain things out.
Well, and what we know for a quarterback especially, I mean, the ball's going to be in his hands on every play on offense, and the guys in the huddle feed off the presence that he brings. And so if he doesn't have if he's not unflappable, if he shows signs that that the last play just sure. did get to him or whatever, that's obviously gonna rub off on everybody else.
And I had an opportunity to work with Brandon last summer. You know, he was the backup quarterback at that time and was sitting third string with Malik Zaire and then Deshaun Kizer playing, and Brandon, you know, took the redshirt year, was just looking to get some more reps. And it's something I saw. You know, he's and Coach Kelly hit the nail on the head. He's hungry. He's a student of the game. But what I really saw, and will reiterate that same point, is he takes a lot of the frustration that he may have and doesn't really show it on his face. He's a perfectionist and wants to get it right. And it's one of those things that if it's a poor throw, let's rep it again. So he takes whatever that negative energy. And you get some guys that maybe wear that energy on their sleeve where you're going to see some poor body language. I haven't seen that from Brandon yet. It's a give me the ball again and let me go.
But we also haven't seen, I mean, we've seen him
sure.
in practice,
no, we don't,
but
we
haven't seen him in a real game.
And that's,
so that's
and that certainly is, it's an intriguing aspect for the 2017 season. You know,
right.
there's a lot of hype around Brandon, and there should be. He's very talented. You look at what he can bring on paper, but he admitted it yesterday or 2 days ago with the media, right? He hasn't started a football game since high school.
Right, exactly.
That's a long time. You don't really know how a player is going to perform when the bullets are flying. It gets a whole lot bigger on Saturdays when you're the starting quarterback for Notre Dame. It's my coach, Ron Paulus, who was my quarterback coach at the time, he said, the whole world is watching you. And whether or not that's true, there are a whole lot of people that are watching you. And if you can't block that out to a certain extent, and focus on your execution, focus on the work that you put in the offseason, it can become big. And you don't know until you run out there and actually play.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. And one of the things that he talked about a couple of weeks ago when we got to see him last in that practice at the stadium was, what did he say, like 30% of the offense. There's still a lot of the offense that they haven't got to, and that's because of the fact that he's wearing the red jersey in practice. All the quarterbacks do. They're not taken to the ground. And so it's essentially touch football out there
that
when it comes
hit,
to the
bam,
quarterbacks.
He's
That's right.
Ready to go.
That's right. And so not just the fact that there's a lot of the offense really that we haven't seen, but we also haven't seen when he gets hit in the mouth and when things do really start going wrong, because not everything's going to be perfect out there. We haven't seen what that response is going to be.
And I'm excited to see that too. I think, I think he's going to deal with it the right way. But it's – and at the quarterback position, you probably asked Brandon, he's probably ready to get hit.
I'm sure he is.
You know, hey, let me be a little sore tomorrow after this. You know, that I actually went out there and did some things. And it has limited his game to a certain extent and, you know, whatever that number is. And it might not be all called quarterback runs within this new offense that Chip Long runs, bringing from Memphis, and his MO of RPOs, the run pass option, where you can hand it off to the running back, you can run it as the quarterback, and then if a defender comes up field, you can still throw it. There's a lot of versatility in it. I think it fits Wimbush's skills very, very well. With him full go, you know, there's a lot. He might put his foot in the ground on the first play and take it 50 yards. He might.
And that's the thing. He's so electric when between the arm that he has, his ability to throw on the run, you throw in the fact that he is so fast and he can find a seam and just head downfield.
If this offense doesn't score 30 points a game, I think they should. I'm not talking average. I think they should be able to put up 30 a game. You're not going to have like, all right, we score 44 and one, and now we put up 17 or 20. I mean, with the skill players they have, the offensive line that they have coming back, I think some growth at tight end and how Chip Long uses that tight end position, and then three really good running backs.
Yeah.
There's no excuse to not put together long drives and score touchdowns.
Let's hear it. And we're going to hit all of those things here in just a little bit here, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. Right now, let's hear from Brandon Wimbush real quickly about what he has to say about his pocket presence.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think my pocket mobility, my pocket manipulation has gotten immensely better due to the coaching staff and Coach Reese and Coach Long have harped on that for the past 7 months, and I've tried to do my best to help my tackles and the rest of my offensive line. And then it also helps that I have to be quick and make decisions and be decisive within the pocket and find my check down. So having the red jersey, there's pros and cons to it as well.
And that's kind of what we were just hitting on there. Now, as someone who's seen him up close, as someone who's watched him in practice all fall and last spring as well, Evan, what's a realistic expectation of what you think you'll see tomorrow out of Wimbush?
Well, I don't think he has to be the hero. Not in this offense. I don't think he can't lose the game.
Right.
Let's put it that way. If he runs the offense, if he pushes the tempo like this offense has worked on, if he distributes the ball, and number one thing is going to be not making mistakes, getting the team into the right plays, running the operation and protecting the football. No turnovers. If he does that, I think he's going to have very efficient games where he's completing above 60% of his passes with whether they're designed runs or they're the RPOs, and then play action pass downfield. There's a lot within this offense that he can do, and I think efficiency is going to be the word that we're going to talk about all year. He has the opportunity to be a very efficient passer for the whole year.
All right, Sean and Sharpley. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to look at Temple. We don't know a ton about Temple because of Jeff Collins, their head coach. But we'll talk a little about that. Who's going to be their quarterback tomorrow?
It might be me.
Yeah, I know, right?
Who knows?
Still kind of a question right now. It is game day tomorrow. Full day of Notre Dame football begins at 9 tomorrow morning with the Jack Swarbrick Show here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. At 10 a.m., it's the Brian Kelly Radio Show with Jack Nolan, assistant head coach and defensive line coach Mike Elston and some of the defensive linemen, our guests this week at 11 a.m. It's game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl. Their guests include three-year Irish offensive line starter and member of the 2015 Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos, Ryan Harris, defensive end from the 73 Notre Dame championship team, Tom Creevy. Each week there's going to be a salute to Ara Parsegian as well, which is really cool. So you guys will be visiting with different players of his to reflect on that. So that's going to be really great. And obviously the team has got that Ara logo on the front of the helmets this year too, which is cool. So that's at Ivy Inn and Suites. Catch the show there with Evan and Tim Growl. That'll be at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Grab an autograph and some delicious free Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue as well. At noon, it's Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I will all be out there from the press box at Notre Dame Stadium. The official pregame show starts at 2:30. The game kicks off at 3:30. And then, of course, when it's all over, the postgame show, Darren Pritchett along with Reggie Brooks, I'll have postgame interviews as well. That is all tomorrow on WSBT. That's a mouthful. It all starts finally at 9 a.m. tomorrow. That's right. It's finally here, though. When we come back, we're going to preview Notre Dame and Temple on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is 25 minutes after 12 o'clock. Sean and Sharpley with the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. We're presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Also visit SharpleyTraining.com.
All right. Darren Pritchett in here doing a few push-ups, too.
I know, man. He's into it.
Man.
All you got to do is show up.
Well, if he shows up to the game day show tomorrow to eat some of that barbecue, we might put a little weight on him.
There you go. Put some meat on the old bones. All right. Notre Dame and Temple, of course, kick off tomorrow at 3:30 here on WSBT. Temple's coming off its second straight 10-win season.
That's crazy, isn't it?
I know. When you think about Temple, you don't think of that. And, of course, the success means Matt Rhule goes to Baylor.
Right.
And now they've got a new head coach in Jeff Collins, who was previously the defensive coordinator at Florida the past 2 years. But
he had some success there as a defensive coordinator and kind of brings that mentality to maybe an already hard-nosed team. I think that, you know, if there's maybe been an MO over the past couple of years with Rhule, it's been consistency, attention to detail, those types of words. And now you've got a defensive-minded coach coming in. Now, does that really help the offense, though?
Exactly.
Isn't that a question mark?
And the offense seems like it's kind of a mix, because they've been a good defensive team, but now what's going to happen with the offense? And now, so they come in to this season, it really, in a much worse situation than Notre Dame went into last year. Everyone remembers how it worked out, obviously, with DeShone Kizer and Malik Zaire last year trying to split time. So they come in. They don't even have a depth chart for anyone, let alone the quarterback position. They've got Collins has this above the line, if you even want to call it a depth chart. So essentially, anyone who's above the line, you could have four players, for example, at any given position. And according to him, they could all see time because they're above what he calls the line. But that's it, what they've got with the quarterback position as well. So what do you think of this whole thing, not even having a depth chart?
I don't know really what to think about it. I mean, it sounds like a middle school idea. I mean, I get, and you heard Brian Kelly talk about that earlier, we have certain expectations where you're above or below the line.
Right.
But at some point,
different situation,
at some point
above
you
the
have
line.
To have a structure on, you know who the guy is going to be. And we're not talking like a two-quarterback rotation right now. We were talking about a couple of guys, but and whether he's just saying this so that Notre Dame has to prepare for four guys, he's saying there could be three or four quarterbacks playing.
I've got to think that's what it is. But whether it's quarterback
there's
or anything
really
else.
There's really not any tape on a lot of these guys. It's not like,
what good is it really doing?
You have a record-breaking quarterback in P.J. Walker, who's been at Temple, who broke pretty much every record they had there throwing as a quarterback and rushing as a quarterback, too. And now you have four guys that you don't really know anything about. I mean, there's not going to be a lot of tape unless you go back and watch their high school film.
Right.
So it's the book is pretty empty to start with.
Mark Narducci from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philly.com joined us on SportsBeat earlier this week, and here's what he had to say about Temple's quarterback situation.
It's going to be either redshirt junior Frank Neutile or redshirt sophomore Logan Marchi. And they have a true freshman, Todd Santeo, who may come in and do some packages as well because he's their best dual threat. And then they have a fourth guy who they're not counting out, Anthony Russo, who has the strongest arm of the four. And they say they have some packages for him. But, you know, it's been a kind of a question that's been going on since spring. Nobody has really risen up. Marchie's about a 6 foot, about 200-pound redshirt sophomore. He was the leader in the clubhouse going into the spring because he was a backup to Philip Walker last year. In the spring game, he was 4-for-10 for 92 yards and 2 interceptions, so he didn't distinguish himself. And nobody really came out and stole the job, and that's why, you know, they've been in this situation. He could be the starter. I don't know. Neutile is a guy that knows the offense the best. He's the oldest guy. And going into Notre Dame Stadium, to me, he would make the most sense. I would not be surprised to see at least two. And they do. Marchie is more of a dual threat guy. He has better mobility than Frank Neutile. The problem is his consistency on throwing. Neutile is a guy, as I said, he's very smart. He has a strong arm. He'll get you in the offense. He's not the most mobile guy. So they're kind of two different people. And then the freshman, Santeo, is really dynamic as a runner and brings that other dimension. Whether he's consistent enough as a passer, that remains to be seen.
So there's a lot from Mark Narducci about the quarterback situation. And when I sit there and listen to it, even more so than when I heard it a couple of days ago, it just sounds like a mess to me.
It's a mess. I mean, that's the easiest way to translate it. It's a mess. I mean, you have, I guess if you put all four of those quarterbacks and took a couple of traits from each one, you'd have your starting quarterback.
Yeah, that's exactly
but if Collins really is planning on, you know, saying we got a package here and a package there and a package there, I just don't see their offense being successful at all. They've got a couple of good running backs. You know, name a starter, say he's going to be our guy, whether it's because, you know, he's an upperclassman, he's a leader, he could run the offense. Those traits, I think, early on, especially if you don't have a clear-cut guy, go with that.
Right.
A younger player might, you know, they talked about Santeo, you know, maybe somebody like that, a guy who can spice things up, gets hot and starts, you know, maybe the second half of the season. But right now you got to go with a guy who's going to have the locker room, that can command the huddle, and that's going to run the offense. If you have some veteran experience on the offensive line, which they do, they have a few guys back from last season, and you have two pretty good running backs. One really good running back in Ryquell Armstead, and then you know, another guy to compliment. Start there. If you don't have a lot of proven talent, even though you've got some wide receivers, start there. Try to run the football.
Well, and I just the quarterback position more than any other is one that you just can't mess with. And we found that, again, we saw it firsthand last year. You just, I think you send wrong messages when you're sitting here saying, well, this guy and this guy. It's one thing, like Texas, for example, last year. They had a guy who was more that big guy and kind of a goal line guy. Did a high school game last week. Valpo had the same thing. When they got in goal line or inside the 10-yard line, they'd bring in a guy, and not necessarily a wildcat, but a direct snap. They knew exactly what they were going to do. He was a bigger physical guy. They run the ball with
NC
him.
NC State last year,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think in those situations, the lines are not blurred.
Right, exactly. It's one thing
specific.
When you're doing that. It's one, but it's another when you've got two guys and you essentially can't make up your mind.
The head coach is pointing at the starter and saying, you are my starter. And then the guy that's next to him is saying, you're going to come in on 3rd and 1. You're going to be our 4th down back. You're going to be our red zone guy.
Now let's talk about the Temple offense. And it's Sean and Sharpley with the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT at 12:33 on this Friday, heading into game weekend. Notre Dame and Temple tomorrow at 3:30 here on WSBT. When Temple has the ball, Evan, what do you expect to see from the Temple offense and the Irish defense?
Well, like I said, I think offensively, the best plan for Temple would be to use some of their experience on the offensive line. They did have to replace a draft pick in Deion Dawkins, but they have some experience at left tackle, right guard, right tackle, and there's a couple of former starters, one coming off injury, that they're going to be in the mix to play. So they have some experience on the offensive line. Anytime you don't have a veteran quarterback, that right there, having some experience on the offensive line, is huge. So I think if you look at, like I said, you have Ryquell Armstead and another running back, Edgar Garner, who they both could run the football. Their strength of their offense is the wide receiver position. But if you don't have a guy that can throw it to him,
right,
why would you go down that route? Try to establish the run, rely on that experience, and then play action pass. And if you look at Notre Dame's defense over the last couple of years, an inability to stop the run when needed, an inability to pressure the quarterback. So if Temple is going to have success, it's going to start with running the football, and then it's going to be taking some shots downfield. You got to believe that they have nothing to lose. Temple has nothing to lose. They're going to throw the whole kitchen sink. So you might see a couple of trick plays. And again, those explosive plays have been what's been Notre Dame's Achilles heel on the defense over the last two or three years. It's been pretty consistent at times, but give up a big play here, give up a big play there.
We're going to talk more specifically about Notre Dame's defense here in a little bit. We're going to break down kind of all of the position groups, both offensively and defensively. But kind of what you're saying right there, the Notre Dame's defensive line against Temple's offensive line and the run, I mean, that's got to be what Temple thinks it can exploit. One of the two things, that and what you said, trying to get the ball deep, but do they have a quarterback who can get the ball deep with a couple good receivers?
If you look at the receivers right now, too, I mean, they go 6'3 or taller across the line, similar to what Notre Dame's bringing, mm-hmm. too. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see how Notre Dame's defensive back, you know, there's some question marks there at safety on how Notre Dame's safeties are going to play. If they do have a package, and I know Mark from Philly.com mentioned, you know, there's a package with one of the quarterbacks who either has, you know, is the most accurate or has the strongest arm, that might be a situation where if they're going to try to go score for score with Notre Dame, which they might have to do.
Yeah.
Do you play ball control? Or if you get down a couple of scores, you're going to have to start to throw. So that's where you could see Temple maybe get out of their initial package of trying to control the line of scrimmage to, well, we got to take some shots down the field. And now you have three receivers that last year combined for 123 catches and over 2,000 yards and about a first down a catch. All coming back, you know, they're all coming back. So you have some guys that can catch the ball for sure.
Yeah, and I think what's most impressive when you look at Temple, Raquel Armstead ran for 919 yards and 14 touchdowns. He was their second leading rusher last year, and he ran for over 900 yards. So obviously they ran the ball well last year, and the best way to take some pressure off an inexperienced quarterback is to run the football.
And then if you can play action pass off that, you're even more comfortable in the pocket as a quarterback.
Exactly.
And if you watch tomorrow the first couple of drives, you're going to get a really good feel for what this new look Notre Dame defensive line is going to bring to the table versus this Temple Owl offensive line. And if it's any indication of how the game's going to go, if Temple is able to move the ball and hit some chunks early, you know, Notre Dame's defense, they're going to have to adjust.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Now the other side of the ball. When Notre Dame has the ball against the Temple defense, what are you looking for there?
Well, they lost quite a bit from last year's team. They had a couple of pass rushers that were very talented. Hassan Reddick's in the NFL now. Between him and a couple other guys, it was over 20 sacks, a bunch of tackles for loss, tons of pressures.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, for Collins, those are going to be some big holes to fill. And if that edge pressure doesn't exist and you've got an offensive line like Notre Dame has, I mean, on paper, you look at who they're bringing back, they should dominate really any defensive front they're playing. You know, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, Sam Mustipher, Alex Bars.
Even Georgia? Yeah. Not to get ahead of ourselves.
Hey,
we'll talk about that next week, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's going to be at least a wash, regardless of who they're playing against. They are on paper, you have two guys who could potentially be first-round draft picks. How many offensive lines can you say that across the country? Two
Not
guys
many.
On the same side, and then you're also bringing back a center with multiple years of experience and a guard who moved from right tackle. You know, the one question mark certainly is Tommy Kramer at right tackle. What's that going to look like? But if Temple is not able to pressure, if they're not able to control the line of scrimmage at the line of scrimmage, Notre Dame is going to be able to do what they want.
Can that hurt them, though, at the same time? Because you do have, everyone knows that they've got these two guys on the left side, so you load up, you stack up, try to...
That's what I do.
...emphasize on, and then, but then it's up to Notre Dame to be able to do something on the other side.
Well, I mean, in a perfect...
And we don't know if they can do that
yet. Right, in a perfect... It's unproven, yeah. In a perfect scenario, you say, listen, we don't have any tendencies as an offense. Now, over the course of a year, you know, maybe we're a little more run-heavy to the left side, and that could be situational. You know, I would hope that if it's third and one, you're going to run to the left side. And even if an opposing team is going to load that side, you would hope that the caliber of player is going to overmatch the caliber of player on the opposite team.
You're right about Temple losing the defensive ends, though, but Jeff Collins, blitz happy. I mean, this guy is going to bring some heat, and that's what... So, from
he's
a Temple...
got 8 or 9 linebackers above the line, is what he said.
There you go. There you go. I mean, see? I mean, so I would think that with Notre Dame having an inexperienced quarterback, that he's going to try to bring a lot of different looks, a lot of different pressures, and try to rattle Brandon Wimbush early.
That's what I would do. I mean, there's no sense in sitting back and trying to play coverage. When you have a new guy in a new stadium, brand new year, first-year starter, you got to try to do things. Bring some exotics... Maybe something that's not on film from Florida, something that you haven't done. Spice things up a little bit. If there is an area on the Temple defense that brings back the most experience, it's going to be the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So try to put pressure up front in the front seven with your defense and let those guys go head to head. Although it might be a flip of the coin with this Notre Dame receiving crew.
Very
true. I think that they're going to win more times than not.
Very true. We're going to get into the Notre Dame defense, Mike Elko next, and also go position by position and rank on each side of the ball for the Irish, how we think, our confidence in the different units on both offense and defense. We're going to rank them on each side of the ball, how much confidence we have in the position groups for the Fighting Irish. With former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Steyers. The debut edition of the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. We're going to do those confidence rankings when we return. Coming up next on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. It is 12:43 on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyers. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Sharpley Training. You can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Also visit SharpleyTraining.com. Well, Evan, we've talked about a lot of stuff already, but Brandon Wimbush and all the philosophical changes, the conditioning changes the Irish have made. We haven't really talked a whole lot about the defense yet, and that, from an on-field standpoint, that's probably the most important thing that everyone's going to be looking at tomorrow when Notre Dame kicks off against Temple.
I would agree. I mean, there's a lot of questions. What's it going to look like? You know, how many pressures, personnel packages, who's going to be playing where, what style, all of those different things. You know, you have a brand-new coordinator in Mike Elko coming in and kind of infusing a new philosophy, a new mentality. He brings along another assistant in Clark Lea, who's going to be coaching the linebackers, one of my favorite coaches, I think, right now on staff. And you see Mike Elston moving to the defensive line. Go ahead, yeah.
No, I was going to say, to me, it's amazing how easygoing Clark Lea is for a linebacker coach. I mean, when you think about linebackers and
highs, you know. His coaching style is so interesting.
I know.
Mean, he's very deep. His communication style, I really like. I think the players gravitate towards that. It's a show me, but also tell me why we're doing this. And if the players understand why, there's much better buy-in of understanding. Okay, here's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Here's why we're working on this. Because if you don't have that, then you're just kind of going through the motions, and there's not really any purpose.
Is that a philosophical shift at all over the last, you know, several years? Maybe that guys need to know why more than maybe they did.
I think it instills a lot more confidence for the player to know what they're doing and where they need to be. If you look at Notre Dame's defense over the last couple of years, I think the one knock was most. You know, a handful of players knew what they were supposed to be doing. And if you weren't one of those handful of guys, how are you going to communicate it to somebody else if you don't even know what you're doing?
Well, you kind of led me into this next soundbite. It's Drew Tranquil. The question came up earlier this week about rotating players in and being able to get more players on the field on the defensive side of the ball. And so Drew was asked about that. Here's Drew Tranquil talking about that.
Yeah, I think you're always looking for depth, obviously, to keep guys fresh. And I think last year you, in order for guys to play, they have to understand the defense. They have to understand the schematics behind what you're doing. And when you have a complicated defense, not a lot of guys can grasp it. So you got to leave guys out there who know what they're doing and can make the checks and calls. But when you simplify things, it allows a lot more guys to get out on the field and keep your guys fresh.
It doesn't really take much to see what he's talking about there, does it?
although I will say, you know, there was some excitement last year during camp, though, too. So I think the verdict is still out for me. I think the defense is going to be better, there, but you have to be, you still have to be a little careful.
Well, the difference last year was supposedly because it was what, year three?
Correct.
For Van Gorder, correct, that the recruiting cycle, they'd been recruiting to that specific defense, and that was going to make a difference. But obviously, it didn't take very long to figure out that that didn't happening. Make a difference. And you still had to keep those same guys out there. And it just, and not that it's an overly simplistic defense, but it's one that it seems like it's easier for them to comprehend. They've been learning this for several months now, going back to last spring, and it just seems like things have clicked. And just what do you think of what you've seen from Elko and what we've seen from the defense on the field during training?
First
camp?
Off, you know, for these players, I think what's been great for them is they have an identity. They know on third and five, we know the call that's coming in. I don't think that over the last few years that's been the case. You have such a wide array, and one check could lead to another check could lead to another check. And in this case now, third and five, I know what it is. You know, right, from the offensive side for me, it was same thing. If we were in the red zone, I knew the first play that was going to be called. I didn't even have to wait for the signal. And I think that's what Mike Elko is bringing, is an identity, a philosophy, down and distance, personnel package. These guys, when they're on the field, they know what they're doing. Whether you want to call that it's simplified, maybe it is. Maybe these coaches are better at communicating. It could be a little bit of both. It could be a combination of simplifying things to, here is our overarching, our broad principle. It's not convoluted. We don't have a million different terms. We're going to have very, very consistent terms across the board. But in these situations, on first down, on second down, on third down, you know, on third and long, in the red zone, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get really good at doing that. And then you can start to build in, you know, some freedom within that.
Right. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyers. We are about 11 minutes away from 1 o'clock, so we're rapidly winding down the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Let's get into our confidence rankings. We're going to go position groups. Let's start with the defense. Start at the end. I don't think it's fairly safe to say we're probably going to be in agreement on which group that we are the least confident in.
Yeah, right now it's the safety position. Yeah. Biggest question mark. Alohi Gilman, the transfer from Navy, was denied by the NCAA. I thought that was going to build some depth, potentially even a guy who could start. Nick Coleman switches from cornerback. He's going to be playing.
Great athlete, yeah, but what are we going to see?
Yeah, I mean, very complimentary. The coaching staff was very complimentary of how he picked things up in the spring, but still, it's a brand-new position. You know, he's viewing it from a different lens now. And then you've got Jalen Elliott, who's going to be playing as well. You know, then behind him, you're going to have Devin Studstill, and then Isaiah Robertson, who's an early enrollee freshman. So the depth is not great. I mean, yeah, you're a guy away from, you know, not being in a situation you want to be in. So I think that position certainly is my lowest level of confidence.
Completely right there with you, because you got a converted cornerback going back there to be one of your top safeties. Again, a great athlete, but what exactly are we going to see back there? All right, what would be next on your list?
Well, I know there's been a lot of praise for the defensive tackles, and I think if you look at the first group right now, I think that's warranted. Where my concern lies and why I put them here at four is just the depth.
Right.
You have two true freshmen right now that are in the two deep. Now, does that speak to how talented they are? And it could be. They certainly have some skills, but you have two upperclassmen that they leaped. Is that their lack of development over the last couple of years?
Yeah. Is that good? Is that bad? And I'm right there with you. I've got the defensive tackles right there, too. Led by Jerry Tillery,
yep,
who's, I mean, we know he's got some talent.
We don't know what's going to happen,
that's
though,
right,
on Saturdays.
But he's been inconsistent, both in play and with some of the dumb stuff in the past. Now, I think the fact that, again, when you go back to these traits of excellence, you've got a guy like Kevin Stefferson, who we know has a lot of talent, who is going to be dressed tomorrow, but he's not going to play. The fact that is still out there, and then you look at a guy like Jerry Tillery, who we know has had some issues, I think that has to say a lot for Jerry,
yeah,
that he's at the top of the depth chart.
You could say, I mean, you know, these young men are still young.
Right.
And you can mature, you know, you grow, and I think, again, what we got back to is those adding that structure has probably been very good for him.
Yep. All right, so those were our bottom two, safety, yeah, and defensive tackles. Probably doesn't surprise anybody. What's next for you as we climb up the ladder in the confidence rankings?
Right now I've got the defensive ends sitting number three. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yep.
I think that they could end up being one of the top two position groups by the end of the year. I don't know. There's a lot of buzz around Dalen Hayes. I like Dalen Hayes a lot. I think if he has the type of season that the coaching staff thinks – and a lot of people that have seen practices, it's going to be, I think this defense is going to look much different. We still don't know. He hasn't played a full year.
Yep.
He didn't play full years in high school either. He's got to stay healthy. He's added some great strength in the weight room. That's awesome. You look at Jay Hayes across from him and Khalid Kareem. And Julian Aquara, I think, is going to be another guy that's going to be in some speed packages. I like what's on paper. Again, very unproven right now.
Still got to see it. Got to see it on the field, and I'm right there with you as well. I really like Dalen Hayes. Trumbetti has had a good camp. He's really moved up. Jay Hayes is over there opposite of Dalen Hayes, and he's listed as an or at both of those defensive end positions. So there's a lot of potential there, but again, we've got to see it actually in action and see if it happens.
And it hasn't been there over the last couple of
years. Yep, that's right. That's right, but it's very important. All right, what would be the number two on your list then?
I've got the cornerbacks at number two right now. But if the defensive line doesn't play well, it's going to put a lot of stress on the back end. But you have Nick Watkins back, great length at the boundary corner. I think he's going to present some issues for some receivers to that side. I really like Julian Love, very consistent player, open field tackler. You know, what you're going to get with this group, or should get with this group, is an elimination of the big play. Keep everything in front. Tackling has been horrendous over the last couple of years. That's got to improve. And it's going to start with these guys. They're going to play a big portion of that coming up and making tackles in the open field. So those two guys, and then getting Sean Crawford back, I think, is going to be important. If he can stay healthy too, he's going to be in the mix either at nickel or playing some type of corner position. And then really who came on strong at the end of the camp was Dante Vaughn. You know, I think he started. He was pretty raw coming in to fall camp, but really finished strong. I think he's going to put himself in a position to be part of that rotation.
I agree. And Julian Love ahead of Crawford at corner on the depth chart, I think, really speaks to how good this unit can be. And the fact that he's climbed as well. He's had a great camp.
Crawford might be the best pure corner or cover guy on the team. Julian is just he's been so consistent since he's playing last year as a true freshman. You know, that's, you grow up a lot when you have to do that.
Well, and we could still see a lot of these guys, depending on down and distance, nickel, dime packages, things like that. These guys out there together, like at the end of spring, or was it in spring or camp? I think it was in the spring still, where Elko talked about, you could see Sean Crawford as the rover,
yes,
basically,
yeah,
depending on what kind of team and what kind of package it is.
Right, which would be, it would be a nickel position if they're going to go five defensive backs, which is a look that they could use and have Sean move around. He's going to be best suited to be matched up with a guy in the slot. That's where his strengths are going
to
be.
All right, we need to kind of speed things up now. Linebacker is obviously our top defensive package. Love this unit. Niles Morgan, Greer Martini, Tavon Coney, and you've got Drew Tranquil at that rover, who's included with the linebackers as well. This is not just on paper, but this is going to be a fun group to watch.
Some good players, Asmar Bilal in there too. And then I think, the question mark is who's going to be the backup at Mike linebacker, which is Jameer Jones right now.
Yeah.
You want some depth there, certainly, in case something does happen.
All right. Let's flip over to the offense. My bottom unit is the tight ends, and it's not because I don't have confidence in the tight ends. It's simply because the offense is ahead of the defense.
Right.
Alizé Mack is still the guy at the top of the tight end bunch. He's still a guy with only 13 receptions coming in. So, and as a group, I think it's going to be good. We're going to see a lot of them, but
I'm with you.
I'm at the bottom.
They're my bottom right now. I mean, it's going to be, what does Chip Long do with the tight ends?
Yep.
We saw a little bit in the new and gold game. We saw three tight ends. We saw freshman Brock Wright playing fullback. And then we're going to see Alizé Mack, I think, split out. And you've got an upperclassman now who's been in the program, in Durham Smythe. I'm intrigued to see how Long used it. He used the tight ends quite a bit at Memphis. Is it going to be the same here at Notre Dame? I don't know.
Right. Now, I'm interested to see how we go with the rest of these offensive groups, because I'll say up front, I've got quarterbacks next.
Man, we're on the
same page.
And again, it has nothing to do with the talent level.
Right.
I think Ian Book had an awesome camp. You know, he can really spin. I think Irish fans are going to, and they've seen him in the spring game, they've seen him in the new and gold game, and he's done well.
Uh-huh.
He can spin the ball. He's very accurate. He's a guy who can complete 60 to 70% of his passes. He's done it at every level so far. And then you've got a guy who has NFL caliber talent in Brandon Winbush. So
right.
I really like it. And I think it speaks to the depth at the other positions as well, but also some proven depth too.
My concern is simply if something happens to Winbush and Book has to be the guy for 2, 3, 4 games, then
and
that becomes a concern.
It's still his first start.
Right. And that's exactly it too. That's exactly
right. These rankings might be way different midway through the season.
All right, we need to speed through these next three groups. I have wide receivers next.
Wide receivers, same thing. Scary group to have at number three.
Yeah, I know. And
you got an All-American who I think, you know, if he has a good season, I think you'll see him in the NFL after this year.
Stud at the top,
yep.
EQ St. Brown. But
like
still,
six guys, though, that are all really good. Two transfers that are both in the starting rotation, and Freddie Canteen and Cam Smith. And then C.J. Sanders is in there, Miles Boykin, Chase Claypool.
Yep. I mean,
Chris Fink's one of my favorite guys, too. He just gets open.
Yeah.
You got a lot of guys that can catch the ball.
A lot of guys who are going to make some plays out there. Running backs, two.
Number two.
Number
running
two.
Backs. Yeah.
Three potential NFL guys, as
Love
Brian
Tony
Kelly
Jones.
Said this week.
Man, he's been
I
tough.
Know. Just keeps making plays every time you
and
see
you know
him with
what?
The ball.
They're going to catch a lot of passes this year, too.
Yep.
I don't know which one is. I think my vote's going to be between Dexter Williams and Tony Jones for being the leading pass catchers from the running back group, but they're going to be a big portion. And you're going to see two of those running backs on the field at the same time.
And then we've got offensive line number one. And I'm amazed that we did this whole list here,
we're
lockstep with all of them.
That's pretty cool.
All right, quick timeout. We've got to get out of this real quick here. We'll come back with a quick prediction as we wrap up this first Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on WSBT. All right, we have like a minute to go, Sharpley. So quick prediction tomorrow.
Not even a 2-minute drill.
I know. We're even shorter than that.
Well, you know, I like Notre Dame. I really do. I like them tomorrow. I think that you're going to have some rust early on. It's an opener. It's what happens. I like Brandon Winbush in his first start. I think he's going to have a lot of guys to throw to. I think the offense is going to run well. They're going to be able to protect him, run the football, play action pass. You know, Mike Elko, he's going to have quite a few questions initially. You know, defensive line and safety, how those positions perform, I think, are going to kind of dictate what's going on. I've got a 37-17 victory.
37-17.
Although it might be close at halftime because that's just kind of how things go. Maybe an early score and, you know, you're biting your nails a little bit, and then I think they're going
to
pull away.
Mine's 31-13. I think that, again, they're gonna have to try to bring some pressure on Brandon Winbush. It's going to be up to the offensive line and the skill position players to support him. I think fans are going to be really surprised pleasantly about what they're going to see from the defense tomorrow. Rich Eisen Show coming up. Great show. Thanks very much. Appreciate Evan Sharpley with Sean Steyer's WSBT.